final verse in the chapter, which has no purport, so we'll go on to the chapter 19. Pramatya daitya prativara naramirdei. Pramatya daitya prativara naramirdei. Let's try another one. Pramatya daitam prativara madhyay. Pramatya daityam prativaranam hridaye. Iyo manrasaya jagat ari sukkaraha. Kridvagra damstre nigagat udanvata. Kridam iveba. Pranatasmitan vibhumitti. Pramatya daityam prativaranam hridaye. Yom hamasaya jagat ari sukkaraha. Kridvagra damstre. Nigadyad udanvataha. Kridhan iveba pranatasmi dhan vibhumiti. Pramatya, after killing, daityam, the demon, prativaranam, most formidable opponent, mirde, in the fight, ya, he who, mum, me, the earth, rasaya, fall into the bottom of the universe, jagat, in this material world, arisukkaraha, the original form of a boar, kritva, keeping it, agradamstre, on the end of the tusk, niragat, came out of the water, udanvata, from the garbhodak ocean, Kridan, playing, Eva, like Iba, elephant, pranatas asmi. I bow down, tam, to him, vibhum, the Supreme Lord, iti, thus. So this is a short description of the pastime of Lord Bor. My Lord, it's a prayer actually, my Lord, as the original Bor within the universe, you fought and killed the great demon Hiranyaksha. Then you lifted me, the earth, from the garbledak ocean on the end of your tusk, exactly as a sporting elephant plucks a lotus flower from the water. I bow down before you. So Mother Earth is offering beautiful prayers to Lord Bor, or Varahadev, describing his pastime. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 5th canto, 18th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Prayers Offered to the Lord by the Residents of Jabaldweep. So we'll go on to chapter 19. There's no purport. So chapter 19 is described as a description of the island of Jabaldweep. So text 1. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, my dear king, in King Purusha Varsha, the great devotee Hanuman is always engaged in the inhabitants of that land in devotional service to Lord Ramachandra, the elder brother of Lakshman and the dear husband of Sita Dev. Text 2. So here we go. This is actually the purport. Translation, a host of Gandharvas is always engaged in chanting the glories of Lord Ramachandra. That chanting is always extremely auspicious. Hanumanji and Aristana, the chief person in King Purusha Varsha, constantly chant the glories with complete attention. Hanuman chants the following mantra. So that's the next verse. The mantra to Hanuman chants purport by His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. In the Puranas, there are two different opinions concerning Lord Ramachandra. In the Lagu Bhagavatamrita 5:34-36, this is confirmed in the description of the incarnation of Manu. Vasudevari Rupanam Avataram Pakirtitaha. Vishnu Dharmo Taro Rama Lakshmanadya Kramadami Padmatu Ramano Bhagavan Narayana Iti Ritaha Shesha Chakram Chasakascha Kramvatshur Lakshmanadayaha Madhya Desha Stita Yodhya Purashad Vastiti Smita Mahavaikuntha Loke Cha Raghavendrasya Kirtita. So that three verses is translated as such. Excuse me. The Vishnu Dharmotara describes Lord Ramachandra and his brother Lakshman, Bhart, and Shatrughna are incarnations of Vasudeva, Sankarsana, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha, respectively. The Padma Purana, however, says that Lord Ramachandra is an incarnation of Narayan, and that the other three brothers are incarnations of Shesha, Chakra, and Sakya. Therefore, Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushana has concluded, Tamidam Kalpa Bade Naiva Sambhavyam. In other words, these opinions are not contradictory. In some millenniums, Lord Ramachandra and his brothers appear as incarnations of Vasudeva, Sankarsana, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. In other millenniums, they appear as incarnations of Narayan, Shesha, Chakra, and Sankhya. The residence of Lord Ramachandra on this planet is Ayodhya. Ayodhya city is still existent in the district of Hyderabad, which is situated on the northern side of the Uttara Pradesh. End of purport. Om Agyan Timirandasya Gina Jana Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhistam Staptitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swayam Padantikam Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, the essence of this particular purport is the apparent contradictory statements in Shastra. But here, by hearing from Acharya, we can get clear understanding of apparent contradictions. There's a statement by American transcendentalist whose name was Walt Whitman. He says, you and I read the Bible day and night, whereas you read black and I read white. So that's an indication that when people read Shastra, they get different understandings or different meanings, different interpretations, apparent contradictions. And that is because Shastra needs to be unraveled by Acharya. Mahajanoyena katasapanta. That one cannot understand a religious principle simply by reading books. All the books are given by the Acharyas, and the Acharyas also explain the books, but the application requires what we say, guru. So guru is essential to explain and to direct the application of philosophical and transcendental knowledge. Otherwise, when we read, we are getting purified, no question about that. And it's interesting because Srila Prabhupada, he went to, we might say, the ultimate limit to explain as much as he possibly could the Vedanta Sutras, or the Brahma Sutras, which is actually Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada went to such length to give the Western mentality an easy and understandable explanation of something that is impossible to understand. And because of that, we can read Prabhupada's books and get an understanding. But still, and if you listen to his lectures and you read the Shastras, there are apparent contradictions. Now, in the material realm, something is right and something is wrong. That's the way material life is. There's a right and there's a wrong. This is the world of duality. So wherever there is one aspect, there is the opposite. But spiritual nomenclature and spiritual principles don't work in the same way. There could be apparent differences or differences, and both could be right. It's a matter of angle of vision, and it's also a matter of understanding the Shastra in relationship to when that Shastra is being explained and said. Just like we hear that, you know, this is the material world. And it is. It's the material world. What does material mean? Material means temporary. So everything in this world is temporary. But is everything in this world temporary? Yes and no. So where's the eternal part of the material world is that the material energy is actually Krishna's energy. And Krishna can't produce anything but something spiritual. So the material energy is actually, from the highest point of view, another aspect of his spiritual energy, but working in a different way, that's all. And therefore, spirit cannot be, what we say, destroyed. Therefore, material energy cannot be destroyed. Even the scientists know that. They say matter cannot be created or destroyed. And that's a fact. So matter, what is temporary is the forms, but the energy itself is eternal. Because when the annihilation comes of the material world, all the elements that make up the ingredients of the forms of the material world in their very basic, let me say, substance, simply merge back into the body of Mahavishnu. They never are destroyed. They're just simply redirected back to where their source is, like that. So when we speak about the material world as being temporary and suffering like that. But it's not. If we see everything in relationship to Krishna. So if you see this material world in a spiritual way, or have spiritual vision, you're practically on the level of the spiritual world. The only difference is you're not there in the real sense of the term. But your consciousness is pure or spiritual. Therefore, one who sees this material world with spiritual vision doesn't see anything material, sees everything spiritual. Because Krishna is everywhere. He's within everything. He's between everything. He's within every atom. Everything is his energy or him directly, either one. So there's nothing material. But then again, there's many, many chapters within the Bhagavatam explaining the nature of this material world and how it's just dukkhalayam, it's suffering, it's so many other things. So from one level, it's described in one way, and on another level, it's described in another way. So that's the example of how spirit or transcendental philosophical knowledge can be right but different. Can be right but different. Prabhupada was taking darshan of Krishna. And there was a devotee standing next to Prabhupada. And somehow the pujari put Krishna's flute on backwards. And Prabhupada's looking. And so the devotee said, "Prabhupada, Krishna's flute is backwards." Prabhupada said, "Yes, he can play from either side." So Prabhupada was seeing it as transcendental. Of course, don't do that. We don't recommend you do that just to create some kind of leela. But it's, you know, for Krishna, there's no right and wrong. Everything is his energy, so he's controlling it anyway. It's in different ways. So here it's interesting. This is a very important point to understand because people discuss and argue over Shastra. It's good to discuss Shastra, but arguments, the only conclusion of an argument in Shastra is the words of the pure devotees. That's the conclusion. Mahajano yena katasupanta. What is that? What's the verse? Tarko pratishta shrutinam vibhinnam. What's the rest of that verse? Dharmasya bhaya. I can't remember the verse. It's from the Mahabharata, but it's mentioned in many places. That if one spiritualist, sadhu, holy man doesn't indifferent from another person, he's not a sadhu. Everybody has to explain the pure scriptures according to their level of realization. But ultimately, what is the ultimate truth? Mahajano yena gata sampanta. So if we want to learn this truth of Vedic scriptures, and what is the truth? The truth is the conclusion. What is the conclusion of all Vedas? Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Vedaischa saham aham eva vedyo, Vedanta krit vedavit eva chaham. So the conclusion of studying all Vedas, and the conclusion of understanding the Vedas, the conclusion of all aspects that are mentioned in the Vedas, is to know Krishna. That's the goal. That's the only goal. Secondary goals are leading one to the higher goal, but they're not the goal themselves. Ultimate goal is to know Krishna, and by knowing Krishna, you can develop love for Krishna. So that's the goal. Now, we come to Krishna consciousness. We don't come simply because we want to love Krishna. Some of us do. Not everybody. And Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita in the 7th chapter that people come for different reasons. Srila Prabhupada was explaining this the other day. I was just listening to it. He was saying there are 4 kinds of people come to Krishna consciousness. 1, those who are struggling, suffering with material energy and want to get out of the suffering, so they try spiritual life. And that's common, especially in the age of Kali, where everyone is suffering. And then the 2nd one is those who want some economic gain. They know that God is the controller and power of everything, so they come to God. Why? So they can get something material. And we see that in our temples. When people come, what do they pray for? Not pure devotional service. They're praying for Rupam Dehi, Yaso Dehi, Dhanam Dehi, Janam Dehi, Dehi. Dehi means give me. Lord, what can you give me? You got it all, so just, you know, share a little bit with me. I'm not a bad guy. I'm your part and parcel. But Krishna's saying, I'm already giving you something, you want more. Of course, he doesn't say that. He doesn't deal with that. That's not his program. But people worship God for something material. So that's another reason why people come to spiritual life. Now, the last 2 is people are curious. What is spiritual life? Let me investigate. It looks interesting. I want to see what I can learn and how I can improve my life with that knowledge. And then higher than that is the 4th, is that I want to know the absolute truth. I want to know the purpose of life. I want to develop my love for the Supreme. Now, Prabhupada says the 2, when they get their desires fulfilled, they generally leave the spiritual path and go back to the material world, because they have achieved their so-called goal of material gain. But the 2 becomes fixed in spiritual life. So even if one comes to spiritual life for something material, when they get something material, still they should not go away and think that this is the success or goal. Because getting something material is not the goal of spiritual life. Because you can get things materially simply by your karma. Like that. And even if you get something material and you're not meant to get it, you won't enjoy it because you're not destined to get it. You know, you see that. People get so many material things and they suffer with the object. They're happy with before they don't get it, just like sometimes people get married. I want to marry that person. Only that person, they marry that, it's just a mess, right? Because they weren't destined to somehow or other have a relationship with that particular living entity. But they're so determined and they get it and it turns their life upside down, inside out. So it's our material, our desires to achieve happiness through material things are always faulty with it. They're always faulty with our own desires. So therefore, if we're looking for some kind of success in material life, then practice Krishna consciousness. Now that's a compromise, but actually Krishna doesn't mind. If you engage in devotional service, Krishna will take care of your material life. You don't have to try for that separately. That's automatic. That's Krishna's mercy. That comes automatically by the grace of God. God takes care of his devotees nicely. So the goal of spiritual life is prema pumartha maha, how to love Krishna. And loving Krishna is natural and it's easy. Now the Shastras describe Krishna in so many different ways and the manifestations of his appearance in this world in the various incarnations. So that, what is the purpose of all these descriptions in the Shastras? Simply to attract our mind and hearts to hear about the glories of the Lord. That's all. As we hear about the glories of the Lord, we lose our taste for material activities. And that's the goal. Sometimes people come to me, Maharaj, you know, I don't like my job anymore. I don't like my husband anymore. I don't like a lot of things anymore. I'm saying, great, you're making advancement. If you still like the things of this world, of course, if your husband's of a devotee, that's different. If you still like the things of this world, and you're practicing Krishna consciousness, that means you need to really work on your Krishna consciousness. Because the things of this world are ephemeral. They're subject to time, and they're not what they present themselves to be. That is called, in one short, small little word, maya, or illusion. So we don't have to worry about that. All we have to do is somehow or other focus our attention on hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. This is the essence of Krishna consciousness. Satam prasangam mama virya sambhido bhavanti hitkarna rasayanikata. Our devotional service, the activities we perform in our devotional service, become happy expressions of our activities in devotional service when we are hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord nicely. That's the most important thing. So devotees should make sufficient time to hear and chant the glories of the Lord. Because Prabhupada wrote these books, why? For us to read. And to discuss, not just to read, but to discuss it. But it says, I got no time. I got too many things to do. Right? We got too many things. We got responsibilities. And even if you try to decrease your responsibilities, somebody else gives you another one. Right? It's just the way life is. That's the material world. Prabhupada said, even if you want to be peaceful, people won't let you be peaceful. It's just the way this world is. But what was that point I was going to make? Oh no, I forgot the point. Huh? Oh, I had a good point and I forgot it. Hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. Oh, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj explains. This is interesting. He says, those who say, I have no time to chant, I have no time to read, he says, they never get the mercy of the spiritual master. I'm too busy doing so many things. He says they never get the mercy. And he says that mentality is like a bad smell coming from the body. Pretty heavy statement, but it's an indication of how important it is to hear and chant the glories of the Lord. Just like we sung that song. Yaso matin handanna brajabaranagara gokulananjana kahana. In that one line, there's so many pastimes of Krishna in that just that one line. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes in this song the different pastimes and activities and different qualities of Krishna in Vrindavan feature. These songs are just so full of bhakti, so full of devotion, so full of intricacies of Krishna's personality, his character, his relationship with his devotees, which just expands unlimitedly. Prabhupada said, you can take one verse in Bhagavatam and your whole life you can spend trying to understand it. That's how deep these philosophical teachings are. But what are you understanding? You're understanding your relationship with everything. The problem in this world is we don't know how to relate to anything. That's our problem. We can't relate to each other. We can't relate to this material energy. We just can't relate. Why? Because we don't understand the foundation of the principle of relationship, which is that Krishna is the source and controller of everything. Everything. Not just the spiritual aspect, but everything. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Maya Dakshena Prakriti, Suyate Sacharacharam, Hetu Nanida Kunte, Ajagavipar, Vipartante. He says, now he makes this point, not, you see grass. You know, grass is very, you know, people walk on the grass and the wind blows the grass and so many things. It's explained not a blade of grass is outside of the control of the Supreme. And think about that. How perfect Krishna's control is. So when we connect with Krishna, we become part of that complete whole. And then we're controlled by Krishna, or we're under his control. People who are suffering are trying to be independent of the control of Krishna. That's the only cause for suffering. That's the only cause for suffering. Independence of the control of Krishna. So the devotees pray, my dear Lord, please control me. I can't control myself. I've been trying. It's hard. And I just keep making mistakes. So you control me. But how does Krishna control you? When you submit to Krishna's instructions for how to become controlled. Or in the instructions of the spiritual master, which are none different than Krishna's instructions. So when you read the Shastras, you can come up with your own ideas on how to be controlled. But when you hear from Guru directly, then the understanding of how to be controlled becomes easy and natural. So therefore, Krishna's shelter is Guru's shelter. There's no other shelter. And Guru manifests himself in different forms of himself, and the essence is his teachings. But in the association of those who are following the spiritual master carefully and perfectly, that association is as good as the following the instructions of the spiritual master. Because we get that mercy like that. Then everything becomes clear. Everything becomes clear. Because when things are not clear, it's very difficult to practice spiritual life. Right? The mind makes things confusing. If you ask the mind anything, it will just take it and turn it around and give you a different understanding. That's the nature of the mind. The mind is full of its own ideas, conceptions, misconceptions. Therefore, one cannot listen to the mind. Just like if you're reading the Shastras, you might read one thing, and then you might think, oh, this is a contradiction. It's like, Prabhupada said so many things that apparently were contradictory. What did he say? Right now I can't think of any. Jai Jagannath, you can think of one thing that Prabhupada said it was contradictory. Yeah, he says, Monday, Arjuna's lamentation was an example of his soft-heartedness. And therefore, that's the quality of a Vaishnava, they're soft-hearted. But then again, Krishna called him a fool in the next chapter. Draupadi, was it Draupadi? No. Yeah, when the five sons of Draupadi were killed, there was a discussion on what to do with Asvatthama, who committed the heinous crime. So Krishna had one opinion, Bhima had another one, Arjuna had some opinion, he was kind of neutral. But Draupadi didn't want Asvatthama to be killed because she was a mother who just lost her sons, so she was thinking that in relationship to me, Asvatthama's mother would suffer just like me, and therefore don't punish him. Now, that's glorious. She was compassionate. But then again, it said that she was a little bit unintelligent. And Bhima didn't go along with that, and Krishna didn't go along with it. But Krishna didn't want to say what should be done, so he took a neutral stance, and he was waiting for everyone else to speak, and then finally Krishna came up with a solution that punish him, but don't punish him. Punish him in such a way that his life is not taken, but at the same time he becomes disgraced and punished, like that. So different persons have different opinions, and everything is right. So two people can be right, but at the same time be different. That's the nature of Shastra. That's why sometimes people say, well, my guru said this, and your guru said this, that, my guru is right, and your guru is wrong. No, just like it says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, if you see two great souls discussing them, and they argue, and they have differences of opinion, if you take one side or the other, you're destroyed. For example, when Lord Nityananda and Advaita, they were in the house of Advaita Acharya, and there was Advaita just cooked this wonderful feast for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who just took sannyas. And somehow or other, Lord Chaitanya wound up at the house of Advaita Acharya. So there was a huge feast. And Lord Chaitanya had been, you know, fasting for some time. And then he said to Advaita, Advaita, I can't eat all this. You know, this is like, you know, too much. And Advaita said, well, you're actually, you eat 56 times in Jagannath Puri. For this is like a little snack. For you, it's really easy for you, no problem like that. So the Lord then said, all right. So, but he said, actually, just give me some simple vegetable. Now, when Nityananda was also there, and Advaita offered him, he looked at it and he said, I've been fasting for 3 days, and now I've come to your house, and you're a grihastha, and I have to fast more. There's not even enough to fill half my belly here. So Advaita said, well, you're just a reject Paramahansa. So Nityananda got mad and picked up some rice and threw it and bounced on the floor and hit stuck on a leg of Advaita, and he started to dance in ecstasy. And then they started to argue. But, who's right? But ultimately, the Acharyas say, if you take the side of Nityananda or Advaita, you're destroyed. Because great souls may differ, great souls may argue, but they're simply seeing the same thing from a different angle of vision, that's all. Just like this purport here is describing that some people say there's two different opinions for the appearance of Lord Ramachandra. He's, Vasudev, along with his associates Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, or he is actually Narayan with his Shesha, Chakra, and Sankhya. So both are right. I remember one time Prabhupada was, not remember, but I heard, Prabhupada was saying, and King Vrishabhanu was plowing the ground and he came across a box. He opened up the box and there was a little beautiful baby girl in it. And that was the appearance of Srimati Radharani. So the devotees were thinking, Prabhupada's got it wrong. He's talking about Sita, how Sita was found by King Janak. But actually, when it came to a discussion, it found out that what Prabhupada was saying was simply Radharani's appearance in a different millennium. That's all. She appeared that way also, but that's not the most common way. So that's the nature of Shastra. Shastra is sometimes differ, but actually right, because it's explaining things. Shastra is not chronological. Shastra is not chronological. When you read the Bhagavatam, it's not giving you a chronological explanation of the pastimes. These things are happening on different planets and in different places at different times. But because these are the most essential pastimes of the Lord, they're put within the Srimad Bhagavatam like that. but they're not given in a chronological way. So if we try to understanding them chronologically, is like another example of how we need guru. You know, people ask Prabhupada everything. I think every question that anybody could ever think of, they ask Prabhupada. And it was good, because Prabhupada answered practically everything that you could If you have a problem, you can just find Prabhupada's Vedabhasa, you'll find the answer somewhere. So one person asked Prabhupada, is Joan of Arc, the Christian saint, is she mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam? Joan of Arc. Well, somebody asked that question here. And Prabhupada's answer was, why are you limiting Bhagavatam? Bhagavatam means the glories of the great souls, so don't limit Bhagavatam. So basically he was acknowledging the fact that Bhagavatam extends beyond what is known as the 12 cantos. In fact, Jiva Goswami explains that in the higher planets they have 1 billion verses of Bhagavatam. And even higher than that, in the highest realms, there's unlimited verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So to understand Shastra, and to understand how Shastra is explaining itself, Guru is essential. Guru is essential. Therefore, we must hear from Guru regularly to understand applications of Shastra. And as I mentioned earlier, Prabhupada really extended himself as much as possible to make Shastra understandable to our Western mind, which is very, very difficult. But still, even that, is like it says that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's no artha, kama, dhamma, or moksha. There's no glorifications of pious activities. There's no plans for increasing economic gain. There's no sanctioning of sense gratification as the goal of life. And there's no focus on moksha or liberation. These are called purusharthas, the activities of the persons in the material world. But then again, if you read some of the stories, talks about liberation. It talks about there was that one king, King Purarava. He wanted to marry this heavenly girl, damsel, I forgot her name, Menaka? Well, no, it wasn't Menaka, it was another one. Urvasi. And she came down to his realm and she had so many conditions and, you know, they got married and you know, she made some strict conditions. I only eat food and ghee. And you shouldn't walk around naked. So many things she told him. And then he broke one of the conditions. And therefore, she disappeared. She went back to the heavenly realm. So he was lost. And he was like, you know, he was like one of these, you know, TV soap operas. He was finished. He was just like over the moon. He just couldn't handle it. He was just crying. So finally the story ends where he performs pious activities so he can go back with to be with Urvasi in the spirit in the heavenly planets. He gets that pious credits and he joins her like that. And that's the end of the pastime. Haribo. Pious activities. So that's Bhagavatam. So if you leave it at that, that's in the 9th canto. If you go to 11th canto, you find out when he got there, he was frustrated, he gave it up and became Krishna conscious. So if you don't read to the 11th canto, you think, well, there's a spot on the Bhagavatam. It talks about, you know, material happiness and how to get it. So therefore, guru is essential. Guru is essential to explain shastras. You know, I hear so many devotees, they quote Shastra, and it's nice to quote Shastra, but to quote Shastra in relationship to the principles that particular verse is meant to be applied to. And therefore, unless we hear regularly from the acharyas and read and then discuss and understand, it's easy to misunderstand. In fact, not easy, it's most likely like that. But still, if you read, you get purified just by reading. But understanding is another level, and we need to hear from Guru. Therefore, Prabhupada went through great, great trials and tribulations just to present Bhagavatam in the most easable and accessible means for the Western mentality. Otherwise, it's untouchable. Even Sankaracharya didn't touch Bhagavatam. He didn't touch it. He touched the Gita, but he wouldn't touch the Bhagavatam. He knew how sacred it was. Bhagavatam is actually the best of all religious scriptures. It's the essence of all spiritual teachings, and it brings about the highest understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, of Krishna, in Sri Vrindavan Dham, like that. So contradictions are there. There are innumerable contradictions, always. Therefore, we should clarify all contradictions by bodhiyantas paraspara discussion and what is called istagosti. Prabhupada wanted that. Devotees get together, ask questions. We hear things. If we get a doubt, doubts are like demons. Krishna killed Madhusudan, the demon of doubt. If we allow doubts to stay in our mind, in any aspect, whether philosophical or practical, that doubt will drag us away from the practice of spiritual life. Therefore, the mind likes to think, I can figure it out. That's the nature of the mind. It's called the secret nature of the mind. The mind thinks, yeah, I got this doubt, but you know, I'll figure it out. But after 10 years, you're still trying to figure it out. Or if you last that long. But the idea is, don't let doubts, because Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, what is that verse? Ajastradanasya samsayatma vinashati nastiro tito loke. I forgot the last verse. Do you have the... No, that's a different verse. Ajascha stradanascha samsayatma vinashati. This is 440. 440. It's worth it. Read the translation. The acharyas talk, there's three kinds of people mentioned in that verse. The ignorant, the faithless, and the doubters. Now, the acharyas give commentaries. There's at least seven acharyas who commented on that verse. And the acharyas say that the ignorant can be changed by knowledge. The faithless, their faith can also, somehow or other, faithless can become faithful through the association of faithful persons. But they say the doubter is lost. There's no hope. He cannot make any spiritual better. So doubts are the two out of three, anyway. The doubter cannot progress in spiritual life, because as soon as there's doubts, there is indecision, and there is hesitation, and then there is what we say, criticism, maybe, and then also gradually falling away. Yeah. So get your doubts cleared through Bodhiantaspara, asking questions. When the doubts are clear, sometimes people doubt their ability to practice Krishna consciousness. That's another illusion. Everyone has the ability to practice spiritual life. You just have to know how to access that mercy and awaken that ability, that's all. Because all souls are equal. No soul, one soul is better than another soul. All souls are equal, and all souls are equally getting the mercy of the Lord. Krishna doesn't favor anyone over another. He says that. What is that verse? 9:29. Krishna says, Samoham samabhuteshu name dveshastina priya. I envy no one, I favor no one, I'm not partial to anyone. But, he goes on to say, if you render devotional service, then you get my favor. So, if you practice spiritual life as opposed to those who don't, you're simply getting the mercy of the Lord that in one way, and someone else is getting the mercy of the Lord in another way, but Krishna's mercy is equal according to how that person approaches the Supreme. So both are getting the mercy of the Lord equally, but the mercy is different, that's all. So, clear up doubts. Don't let doubts, because doubts will stall us on the path of devotional service. Any questions? Yes, Chai Jagannath.
You were speaking about the importance of hearing from Guru to understand and reconcile the various contradictions that we hear in the Shastras and in the words of the Acharyas. So I was wanting to know, in light of this understanding, I was wanting to understand the presentation of ISKCON today on the topic of one having a direct relationship with Prabhupada. In light of the idea that we need a guru to understand the and reconcile the understandings of Shastra and the previous statements of Acharyas, how do we take that understanding, you know, next to this one of having a direct relationship with Prabhupada? Because I'm not clear what that actually means.
How, I haven't heard anybody say we don't have a direct relationship. The only persons I hear that say we don't have is those who speak wrongly. But there's not an opinion that you don't have, not an authorized opinion. Oh, what does it mean to have a direct relationship with Srila Prabhupada? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Prabhupada says, he explained it this way. Hey! Do that. You need a guru to tell you what to do. You may know the Shastra, and you may know everything, but you need guidance on how to execute devotional service. The practical application is the presence of one spiritual master. That's all. The philosophical teachings are there within Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada is explaining them. But when you have someone who takes that and explains it in a very direct way, according to the nature of your situation in question, you're getting more of the same thing, but you're getting it completely, that's all. So, it's just, I always say that those who are disciples of Prabhupada's disciples are more fortunate than Prabhupada's disciples, because they have both Prabhupada and Prabhupada's disciples. It's like you're getting the same thing in a double package, that's all. Now, Prabhupada's disciples don't speak differently than Prabhupada. And they practice what Prabhupada teaches, and they teach the same thing according to their understanding and realization. So the question is, yeah, you're getting more. Not that you're becoming less direct because you're going through or apparently have another person explaining the same thing. He's the founder of Acharya. Prabhupada said that. Anyone who comes into this movement has a direct relationship with me. That means he is the foundation for what everything that goes on in this movement. Whatever we do is coming from Prabhupada. The application is coming by way of the understanding of his teaching as applied according to time, place, and circumstance. But Prabhupada is the foundation. In other words, he teaches the principles. The details may change according to time and circumstance, but the principles are never changeable like that. So as long as we're following the principles, we have a direct relationship with Prabhupada. Directly. There's nothing that goes on in... If you inspect everything we do within the temple, you find it's all coming from Thich Prabhupada's instructions. How to do things and how to understand things and how to do things. So everything is there. That's direct. Because the relationship with the spiritual master is through vani, words, not too much physical proximity. That's there, that enhances the vani, but vani itself is, you know, self-effulgent in the sense that when you're following the instructions, you're connected directly with the spiritual teacher. And Prabhupada's instructions is the foundation for anyone. Anyone who represents Prabhupada or is in the position to represent Prabhupada and doesn't follow Prabhupada, they're no longer qualified to, you know, in other words, they become a block. Therefore, we reject that. So those who are representing Prabhupada have to represent Prabhupada completely, perfectly. Otherwise, you know, they obscure that person's relationship with Prabhupada, and that's a problem. That actually happened in 1977. I won't mention who. Right after Prabhupada left, there was this one spiritual master who said, the only way you can have a relationship with Prabhupada is through me now. Now Prabhupada is gone. He said that to his disciples. But that's not true. They can have a direct relationship with Prabhupada, but they still have to follow their spiritual master's teachings because he's teaching the same way. But he made a division. He says, you can't approach Prabhupada unless you approach it through me now. But that's not true. And it was that went on for some time. In fact, there was others who said the same thing. The Prabhupada's only accessible through me. But that's not true. You have a direct relationship with Prabhupada. Direct through his books, through his words, through his deity. There are many stories where people who never met Prabhupada, Prabhupada came and talked to them, told them what to do. There was a beautiful, beautiful story just recently. No, actually, this was a Prabhupada disciple. But anyway, Prabhupada appeared to him in a dream just recently and told him to take sannyas, just like Bhaktisiddhanta did to Srila Prabhupada. And that was like 35, 37 years after Prabhupada disappeared. Prabhupada's still active through many, making his appearance and giving directions and instructions to many persons, even today. But on a practical level, everything is there in his books and in his, you know, teachings. Yeah, so it's direct. Indirect means through something else, right? That's the word indirect. When you go to the source through another means. But you don't need another means. Prabhupada is there for everybody. The question is how, if you can access that. So the disciple of Prabhupada helps you access Prabhupada, but the relationship is direct. They're a catalyst to the connection and can help you. And if you can take advantage of that, that's nice. But there's others who have a direct relationship with Prabhupada without that catalyst. Prabhupada's there. Huh? But But as Prabhupada said, you need a living guru in order to connect one to the disciplic succession and guide you in a practical, what we say, the practical way of executing your devotional service. Somebody to pull your ear. Prabhupada made that example. He pulled the ear. Hey, do this. Prabhupada's not here to pull your ear. So you need your spiritual master to do it. Right, Kunyanidhi? You got some ear pulling, right? Just recently. It's good. It's good. We like that. We want the spiritual master to come and change it. Hey, you're off. You should be serving in a different way. You're not making an advancement this way. Or you should be serving, doing your service in a different way, or a different understanding, practically. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, for the practical point of view, you need spiritual master to guide. Now, that same spiritual master, if he departs, then you take shelter of his representative in doing your devotional service. No one should be independent in any aspect of spiritual life, because you just get off on your own. You do what you want, and then later on you make mistakes. Unless you're a pure devotee, you'll make mistakes. That's why we're trying to institute this devotee care system. And it's both spiritual and it's practical also, how to engage devotees in devotional service like that. Prabhupada set the foundation. But yes, you definitely need guru. It's not like what the Ritviks say, you know, you can have a direct relationship with Prabhupada and that's all you need. But the spiritual master's instructions say, tad vigyartam guru maeva abhigasya. You must accept a living guru, take shelter, Rupa Goswami's statement in Nectar of Devotion, first principle, shelter, and second is diksha, or initiation, like that. There's a reason for that. You still don't look convinced. Okay, let's see what we do with this. What's the partial you're not convinced of? This is an interesting topic. Let's explore it a little more.
I'm convinced on the side that everything we're doing is coming from Srila Prabhupada. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, we have a direct relationship with Prabhupada, because mm-hmm. everything we're receiving inside ISKCON is coming from Prabhupada. So that makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
What wasn't making sense to me is I'm still unclear about what it means to have a direct relationship with Prabhupada, because in the sense that you were saying that the spiritual master is a catalyst that helps the connection with Prabhupada. So what came to mind for me when that was said is that, well, how is Prabhupada any different than he's a catalyst that connects us to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta? But he frowned upon us thinking that way, obviously. So that's where I become unconvinced of, I'm still not clear what it means to have a direct relationship. Other than that, we're following everything that Prabhupada has given. That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
But not in the sense that the spiritual master is just a catalyst to the connection with Prabhupada. That doesn't make sense to me.
It's not just that. That's part of it. That's all. What I stated needs clarification. That's just part of it. But the spiritual master also is your eternal guide in your practice of devotional service. But anyone who comes within this movement, who is a disciple of Prabhupada, who takes on disciples themselves, has to be a transparent being to Prabhupada. That's the power of successful, what we say, year after year, movements stay successful when they are, what we say, what's the word, transparent to the founder Acharya. The Madhvites, the Ramanujas are still strong because they just glorify and focus on Madhvacharya and Ramanujacharya. And everybody has to learn Ramanujacharya's teachings and his, otherwise they can't really come up to the standard. So it's direct in that sense, just like we have a direct relationship with Krishna, right? But it's through the spiritual master. Is it indirect? No, it's direct, but the spiritual master is the eyeglasses for the connection to the transcendental medium of the Supreme Lord. So direct in that sense means the relationship is direct, but accessing that relationship doesn't mean you just dispense with all other aids for that written connection. You can use whatever you can to increase that connection, but the correction is direct. That's it. Yeah. You can't, in the day-to-day application of your devotional service, we need to hear how to apply Prabhupada's instructions according to our particular situation. And the understanding that Prabhupada gives in his philosophical teachings. So therefore, our spiritual master can answer that. And now, if you can answer it yourself, that's fine. But that's, most of us can. So transcendental knowledge doesn't stop with Prabhupada. It's not like, that was the end and there's no more to learn.
In the day-to-day application of your devotional
service. So Prabhupada's disciples, taking Prabhupada's instructions, applying it, get their own realizations on Prabhupada's teachings and give us newer and the understanding more understanding of the same principles from different angles of vision.
So therefore, our spiritual master
can. And you see that if you listen to the different gurus, they present Prabhupada in so many different and interesting ways.
But that's
and none of them are contradictory. They're just giving it from their own understanding.
Transcendental knowledge is not doesn't stop.
That's how broad Prabhupada is. That's the same way Prabhupada's presenting Krishna. There's no more to learn. Just like he's representing the other acharyas.
Disciples taking Prabhupada's instructions.
So that's an extra added feature
on
knowledge and understanding that comes, but through our spiritual
understanding of the same principles from different angles of vision.
So therefore, our spiritual master. And you see that if you listen to the different gurus, they present Prabhupada in so many different interesting ways.
We have a whole bunch of questions,
and none of them are contradictory.
Yes,
they're just giving it from their own understanding.
Transcendental knowledge is not. Doesn't stop.
That's how should we view our
the same
thinking
way
of the Guru Vashtanam we sing every morning?
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if should we be thinking of our spirit, of our Diksha Gurus
that's
as, you know, very exalted Uttamadhikaris, or should we think that they are, you know, not so exalted, but they're connecting us to the exalted Guru Srila Prabhupada? What should be our view of our Diksha Gurus?
And you see that if you listen to the different gurus, they present so many different interesting
ways. We have a whole bunch of questions.
And none of them are.
We go to the Nectar of Instructions. It says that one can perform the service of the spiritual master and still be on the mud of the mud. You know,
we sing every morning.
Yeah. So some gurus may be on Uttamam and some may be on Madhyam. So you want to figure out where your guru is. Is that going to make you love him any more or follow him any better? It doesn't really matter.
You know, not so exalted, but they're connecting us to the exalted guru.
And then the danger of that, you start comparing. And you start thinking, well, my guru is Uttamam and yours is Madhyam. Therefore, you know, jump on board the faster train, you know.
Says that one can perform.
So, you know, it doesn't really matter.
Still be on the mud,
you might spend your whole life trying to figure
out. Gurus may be on,
but even those who are on Madhyamam can't come to Uttamam. And it says that in the Sangha discussion. That it says a Madhyama Adhikari can only take his disciples as far as he is. But he can make more advancement, and then gradually disciples can also follow in the same way.
And you think, well, my guru is Uttamam.
Muslim and yours is
So that's why sometimes people in our movement
jump on board the fast train.
Don't want to take Western gurus. They want to take Indian gurus because they think Indians are a little bit more uttamam and the Westerns are a little more
madhyamam. Spend your whole life trying to
and it's like that.
But even those who are on madhyamam.
But that's also bodily conception of life.
That it says a madhyamadikari
can only take his disciples
proceeded in that way.
But he can make born better.
It doesn't so matter so much.
My guru is uttamam and yours is
So that's why sometimes people in our
was asking that question not so much from the point of view of from my like Indians. You know because I'm worried that I'm getting in the comparing mentality or I'm trying to analyze where my spiritual master is situated. My question was more that when we read the Bhagavatam or the songs that we sing we place the spiritual master in a very very exalted position and when we hear usually what we hear from Prabhupada's disciples are, I am your transparent medium to Prabhupada.
Right.
So then, is it Prabhupada that I'm assisting, or is it my Diksha Guru that I'm assisting? Because in my mind, I have a clear conception, but I'm just curious what the institutional was.
That discussion came up in some of the persons who were on the spiritual platform, the practicing guru, they said that verse doesn't apply to me.
So,
that's
the
statement of humility. You know, that they're intimately connected with Krishna in the groves of Vrindavan, making tasteful arrangements for Radha and Krishna. Anyone who is a spiritual master is either in the role of they're either coming from the Tattva of Nityananda.
That discussion came up.
Coward boys. Or they're coming in the Tattva of spiritual platform practicing the Madhurya Ras.
They said that verse doesn't apply to me.
That's the statement of humility.
So
I can't say who's who.
That they're intimately connected.
But just see your spiritual master as your as the person who you're willing to give your life to.
Anyone who is a spiritual master
is either in the role of everything. They're either coming from the.
We try to figure it out.
Even when Prabhupada was asked, what is your soul?
They're coming in the Tattva.
He answered two different ways. The first time he said, that you do not require. And the second time he said, if I told you, you would faint.
So I can't say who's who.
I just read another book.
Just see your spiritual masters
recently when one disciple asked one of Prabhupada's godbrothers, what was Prabhupada's swarup? And he said, I'll tell you later. Then he asked the question again. And then he said, well, I think it's Madhurya Ras because he likes kirtan a lot. And that's the answer he gave.
Two different ways. The first
those who absorb themselves in kirtan are more inclined to Madhurya Ras because that's Chaitanya. But Nityananda is also there. And he's not in Madhurya Ras, he's in Sakya Ras. So, you know, there's a whole book written about this, trying to figure out what
Prabhupada's what was Prabhupada's
Swarup. Exactly. Trying to figure out Prabhupada's internal mood. Don't waste time.
Then he asked the question again.
Don't waste time. Get on with the real business of hearing and chanting.
Well, I think it's Madhurya Ras because he likes
and take your spiritual master as Krishna's representative.
That's the answer.
And serve him in that way. That is none different than Krishna in the mood of service like this.
When Nityananda is also
and as you grow in your spiritual life, you'll learn, you won't have to ask these questions.
You know, there's a whole book.
You'll be able to see things clearly. And no one will explain it for you. You'll understand things.
Don't waste time.
Chandi Tendriya?
Don't waste time. Get on with the real business.
business of hearing and chanting.
Well, I think it's Madhurya Ras because he likes.
And take your spiritual master as Krishna's representative.
That's the answer.
And serve him in that way.
I was wondering, Badri Narayan, when he comes,
mood of service.
He says, he gives a kind of a chronological thing that's what's happening in ISKCON, and you've been gone about a year. I was wondering if you could share with us some of your experiences.
You'll be able to see things clearly.
Would be encouraging for us.
And no one will explain it.
Well, in the last year or so, you've been gone about a year.
Don't waste time. Let me ask the question.
Chandu Tendriya?
Don't waste time. I'm down with the real business of hearing and chanting. I think it's Madhurya Ras.
Went to a lot of kirtans.
Your spiritual master is Krishna's representative.
We went to the Ukraine festival this year.
I was wondering.
14,000 devotees were there.
He says. He gives a kind of a chronological thing that's what's happening in ISKCON, and you've been doing about a year. I was wondering if you could share with us some of your
kirtans are amazing.
Experiences.
Indradumna Maharaj, Bibi Govinda Maharaj, Naranjan Swami, Ramananda Swami, Vaishnava Gyan Maharaj, Devamrita Swami. That's just a few. Who else is there? Madhava Prabhu is there.
Went to a lot of kirtans.
Shivaram Maharaj. He went the year before.
We went to the Ukraine festival this year.
My God, there's so many.
Amazing.
So I've been, you know, taking the kirtan circuit.
I've
been doing a lot of that. Ukraine is amazing. The year before they had.
Kirtans are amazing.
7,000, no, 8,000 devotees. This year they had 14,000. They expect to double it every year. They're worried because the government's saying, hey, you guys are getting too big, you know.
It's just a few. Who else is there?
So, and it's interesting. The service attitude there is the most amazing. 14,000 devotees, they made a packed lunch for everybody on their departure.
Amazing.
Can you imagine that?
You know,
every day they cook. They were cooking 6 tons of prasadam. No, every meal was 6 tons of prasadam.
The year before they had kirtans were amazing.
The people in the kitchen, so it's an amazing festival. And throughout the day there's seminars going on. There's like 20 to 30 seminars going on throughout the day. So. It's an amazing. You should come.
And it's
come
interesting.
To the Ukraine festival there
is the most
amazing festival.
14,000 devotees. They
it's really
lunch
taking over the world.
And their departure. Can you imagine?
It's expanding like crazy.
Every day they cook. They were cooking 6 tons of prasadam.
Yeah, and Indradumna Maharaj's polling festival. There's a lot of major programs going on.
In the kitchen.
The emphasis on chanting and.
So it's an amazing.
The whole day,
festival.
All you do is chant
day,
and go to classes. That's all. 24 hours.
20 to 30.
Of course, there's devotees doing service too. And you know what the amazing thing is?
It's an amazing.
The whole thing is free.
And it's interesting.
Nobody pays anything.
It's an amazing festival. 14,000.
And
devotees.
Still,
really
they never take a loss because people give donations.
Can you imagine?
They say, you know, please, if you'd like, we welcome donations.
Yeah,
so they get more donations to cover. But still, they don't charge anything for the festival.
Programs going on.
And the whole thing's carried out by the congregation. The temple devotees do nothing.
The whole day, all you do is chant.
The congregation does everything. They organize it.
Of course, there's
they set it up.
Service too.
And it takes a week just to set up the festival.
Nobody
just to set it up and all the tents and all the facilities and the cooking.
And still,
it takes about three or four days to break it down after it's over. It's an amazing program.
They
say, you know, please, if you'd like.
Well,
yeah, there's book tables there.
And
that's one of the major parts of the festival.
To cover.
But the thing is, at night, everyone comes to the kirtan and you see like 10,000 people dancing and chanting. The Mangal Arti is like 4,000 people there. It's a little crowded.
They organize it.
So, yeah. And this was one of the major experiences I had coming to the Ukraine festival.
To set it up. all the tents and all the facilities.
So there's a lot of kirtan programs going on, seminar programs.
It's amazing.
I did a little internal work this year for 2 months. I didn't travel. I did just did some chanting and reading and other work. It was in October, November.
But the thing is, at night, everyone comes to the kirtan, and you see, like,
and the whole thing decided to slow down for a little while.
Mangal Arati is like 4,000 people there.
Get ready for Chicago.
So, yeah. This was one of the major experiences I had coming to the Ukraine.
Okay, thank you. There was another question. Was a community.
So there's a lot of kirtan programs going on, seminar programs.
Gokulananda.
It's amazing.
I did a little internal work this year for 2 months. I didn't travel. I did just did some guru chanting and reading and other work.
It was in the direct relationship with Srila
Prabhupada.
So you mentioned that everyone can have a relationship with Srila Prabhupada, a direct relationship.
It's available.
And then, but we need a guru to teach us how to follow the instructions of Srila Prabhupada.
There was another question.
I want to know what is the potentiality of diksha regarding in connection with the direct relationship with Srila Prabhupada? What is the difference between following Srila Prabhupada and having a Shiksha Guru, not taking initiation, but I still claim that I have a relationship with Srila Prabhupada and I have guidance because I have Prabhupada disciple who can guide me? And the difference between, I want to know, following Srila Prabhupada and taking diksha, potentiality, initiation from a Prabhupada disciple, regarding receiving instruction from the direct relationship.
So your question is basically that I don't have a diksha guru, but I have a shiksha guru, and then I can get connection through Prabhupada with my
shiksha guru. Not taking
diksha and shiksha are actually two aspects of the same thing.
But I still claim that I have a relationship with Srila Prabhupada and I have guidance.
The principle, the guru principle is fundamental. One has to take a spiritual
master. And the difference
master.
Between, I want to know,
that's the instruction of all the acharyas. Even Krishna says it. Tad vidibhati partena pradipasena sevaya. So everyone has to connect themselves to the parampara through the formal procedure of initiation as given by, as explained by Srila Rupa Goswami, and as practiced by all the acharyas. Now, you can make advancement through shiksha, obviously. But the question is, when then is the question is, one has to take a spiritual master. Are you going to? That's the instruction of all the acharyas.
Even Krishna.
When you get initiated, you make a vow.
No,
vows are sacred.
Connect themselves to the parampara.
Now, but if you have a shiksha guru, you may not make any vows.
Given by,
then you're a little bit independent, and if things don't go, you can change. You can also jump from shiksha to shiksha.
Now, you can make advancement.
So this kind of ensures what we say, obedience and allegiance to the parampara.
Then the question is, one has to take a
yes, my question is not necessarily the importance of why should we take diksha, but how the diksha in ISKCON is important in the our already. You say that we already have a relationship with Srila Prabhupada if we
as the founder of acharya.
Yeah, as the founder of acharya. So,
but not as diksha guru.
Yes, not diksha.
Prabhupada. He's your shiksha guru.
Because the argument of the Rigveda is
obedience,
you mentioned that they say, okay, I follow Srila Prabhupada. Yes, my question is, not necessarily.
But Prabhupada says you're not following me. They say they're following. Prabhupada says something different. So who do we should really believe?
But my question is, how a Diksha Guru is any esoteric
as the founder of Acharya.
Feel that happens when you take the Diksha in your relationship with Srila Prabhupada?
Yes,
not because he's teaching Srila Prabhupada and they are available for everyone now. And I can be even in another Sampradaya or Gaudiya Vaishnava. And I can read Prabhupada's books like many others are doing, and at the same time take Diksha in another school that is not Islam. And then I'm taking Diksha and I have a direct relationship with Srila Prabhupada. Someone can say like that.
If you're taking Diksha in an authorized line, fine.
So you can have a relationship with Srila Prabhupada and be initiated in another school that is not ISKCON, but is a bona fide school.
You have to get approval from your Diksha Guru also. You can't just go to Prabhupada and just automatically. Your Diksha Guru in another line may have some differences.
Read Prabhupada's books.
Even Prabhupada said that when devotees wanted to take another spiritual master after he was left. They wanted to take his God brothers. He said if they say something different, then your faith will be challenged. Anyone in an ISKCON is aligning themselves with Prabhupada. Someone in another line, they may also acknowledge Prabhupada's position as a great acharya and as a world teacher to say that he's glorious, but still the application of the philosophical teachings may be different. And they usually are. When devotees wanted to take another spiritual master, even the Gaudiya Mass applies the principles different than we do. Although, we're coming in the line of the Gaudiya Mass apparently. So chastity to one spiritual master is the glory of the disciples with Prabhupada. So if you're chaste to your spiritual master and he allows you to read Prabhupada's books and follow Prabhupada's teachings, that's fine. But if he doesn't, or he has some questions, or he's different, you're going to be confused, or you're going to also be an offender to your own spiritual master. What is the potential of having ISKCON? Chase to your spiritual master. Well, Prabhupada said that. Prabhupada broke from the Gaudiya Math because they became a sarva, became useless. They were no longer following the teachings of Bhakti Siddhanta. So Prabhupada had to restart the Gaudiya Math in the form of ISKCON. And that's what he did. So ultimately, he kept the cyclic succession connected by restarting the Gaudiya Math in the form of the ISKCON movement.
Today, Gaudiya Math is there are new gurus,
they're preaching. Because they can reestablish themselves through the process of preaching as long as they're following Srila Bhakti Siddhanta's teachings. He is the founder of Acharya for the Gaudiya Math. That's also brought out in that founder of Acharya series that we've been presenting, that he is also founder of Acharya.
That's what he did.
Because he founded the Gaudiya Math.
Ultimately, he kept the cyclic succession connected by restarting the Gaudiya Math in the form of the ISKCON.
The thing is, when you start mixing these different sampradayas, you'll find that there's a difference in application of your philosophy. And by following that principle, you become very dear to Srila Prabhupada and you get special mercy from Prabhupada.
Because he founded the Gaudiya Math. Ultimately, he kept the cyclic succession connected by restarting.
That's fine. If someone in another sampradaya, there's many persons who love Prabhupada from other sampradayas.
You'll find that there's a difference.
And if they get approval from their spiritual masters to follow, teachings of Prabhupada, then that's fine.
Because Prabhupada can be their Shiksha Guru. That's all. He's not their founder Acharya. In our sense, he's founder Acharya, which is different. That's fundamental to our practice of spiritual life. Shiksha is something you choose. You can't, in this gun, you don't choose Prabhupada. As soon as you come in, you're already chosen. He's there. The choice is already made.
That's fine. If someone in another sampradaya, I mean, there's many persons who love Prabhupada from other sampradayas.
One more?
If they get
how are we doing on time? Is that okay?
To follow, you know, teachings of Prabhupada? That's fine. And Prabhupada can be their shiksha.
It's up to you.
He's not their founder of charity.
I'm just a servant. You just tell me.
Which is different. That's fundamental to our practice of spiritual life. Shiksha is something you choose.
Kundanidhi has a burning question here.
You don't choose Prabhupada.
Okay.
As soon as you come in, you're already chosen. He's there. The choice is already made.
Just for a little information, next weekend is the seminar on guru-disciple relationships. So I'm sure these discussions will also manifest.
Yeah.
I hope not too many of them. Because Guru Tattva still hasn't been sorted out. It's not clear yet. It's still not clear. There was a recent paper put out by the GBC that was the end of last year, which sort of gave a somewhat final understanding of Guru Tattva, at least to the point where all some of the major arguments have been summarized. But still, the paper leaves some openings.
Discussions will also.
Because Guru Tattva is just so multifaceted.
I hope not too many of them.
Because
so multifaceted.
Guru Tattva still hasn't been sorted out.
I mean, Prabhupada said certain things like,
anyone who reads my books is my disciple.
There was a recent paper put out by the GBC at the end of last year.
So are they or aren't
they? Sort of gave
a
somewhat final understanding of Guru Tattva, at least to the point where all some of the major arguments have been summarized.
I'm not qualified, but whatever I have read from Prabhupada's book I'm trying to present.
The
thing is that about relationship, direct relationship and indirect relationship, there are three kinds of guru. One is mainly, one is Dikha Guru.
One is, what's the first one?
Dikha Guru, initiation guru. And another is Sikya Guru. Another is Chaita Guru. Chaita means Krishna is the Chaita Guru.
There's also Vartmar Padaksha Guru.
I'm not qualified, but
that's another
whatever
guru.
I have read. So here the question is coming about relationship. So Krishna guides within and Guru guides outside, externally. And Sikya Guru can make any numbers. No, there is no limit.
So ultimately Krishna is the only guru.
Yes.
Because Krishna manifests himself in different forms of himself as the spiritual master.
And
Guru in the heart is Chaita Guru.
Right.
And one can take instructions from Chaita Guru through the manifestation of Chaita Guru, which is your Diksha Guru.
That's another guru.
And here also, it is stated that after we quit our body, when we quit our body, then our soul is identified by Sikya Guru to the Krishna. When we go Golok Vrindavan, that time is this soul is identified by our Sikya Guru.
Different forms of himself.
That's what they say that.
I don't have read that. But in other words, the spiritual master is there to bring you to Krishna.
Another thing regarding the question. You are judging guru. The thing is, there is a nice verse, I forgot. I have only one word. Sarva Deva Maya Guru. This guru is the sum of all the demigods.
Yeah.
So, there is no question of judging him. It is offense. And there was a discussion between Dr. Patel and Prabhupada in Bombay. By that time, going on the morning walk, Prabhupada fired him, anything like, you know, how could you dare to say Guru has physical body, means
spiritual master.
So like that, so it is very, very offense to judge regarding the...
No, he wasn't judging, he was making some statements.
Judging Guru, still it is things that are wise words. That is also, I have only one word, depreciated. Guru.
Okay,
thank you.
All right.
So there is no question.
Can't live by philosophy alone.
There is a discussion between Dr. Patel and Prabhupada.
Okay, thank you very much, Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada.